We own this country.
We own it. And it's not you owning it and not politicians owning it. Politicians are employees of ours. And they're just going to come around and beg for votes every few years, and it's the same old deal. But I just think that it's important that you realize that whether you're Democrat or whether you're a Republican or whether you're Libertarian or whatever, when somebody does not do the job, we've got to let them go.
When your entire culture is under attack, you need the country's number one voice in defense of our American way of life. You need an ally in the fight against tyranny and corruption. You need your weekly dose of Lisa Payne Nager. Missouri Grassroots Radio Network proudly adds our own beauty to America the Beautiful, your own culture vigilante, Ms. Lisa Payne Nager.
Tonight, it's all about the media, and I swear I didn't plan it this way, but it just kind of fell into place. We have it's just great time for people in the grassroots movement to think about the media and to think about how the media influences the culture and how it influences your government and your news and the way you raise your family, the things that your children are exposed to, the things that they're not exposed to from the media. We're going to talk a little bit about that pretty quick here. We have a pretty interesting show lined up for you tonight. Thanks to my good friend Bob McCarty. He put me on to some great folks who are working on a film, some California movie producer types who are working on a great film that you have probably never heard anything about this subject matter, and it's just riveting. And we're going to talk to Mark Marshall in a few minutes and his cohorts. They're putting on a movie trying to make a movie called Remembering the Sultana, and it's the largest maritime disaster in American history. And they're going to come on and tell us all about that situation and how that got started and how you folks can get involved in helping that project along. Just amazing history. You're going to be riveted by this. When I was doing the research for it this week, it was just amazing. Also, later on in the show, we're going to talk to Owen Schroyer. He's a young guy here in St. Louis. He's got a radio program on 1380 AM KXFN Radio. We're going to talk a little bit about how we can work together as conservative-minded, independent folks to help the media move our message a little bit, because you know we fight this struggle every single day in the media to get the real news out about what's really going on and to inform the regular folks. Most of the folks in the grassroots movement and the patriot movement are pretty well informed because we take the time, we make the effort to go the extra mile, to surf the web, to go a little deeper, not just to soak up what the mainstream media feeds us. I'll tell you, most of my neighbors, most of the people I know on a social basis don't do that. So we need to start a dialogue about how we can expand that message and go beyond our own little bubble, because we've been talking to ourselves for about 4 or 5 years now. And while we're all very well versed in the corruption and the malfeasance and everything that's going on in government, most of our friends are not. So we need to start finding ways to work together to fix that problem. Couple things in the news kind of wanted to bring to your attention before we get rolling today. Just some real short things, because I know most of you folks are pretty well engaged. Today I was surfing the web, looking for news stories to talk about tonight on the show, and I've been following the Edward Snowden case pretty closely. And when I first started to follow the case, I really kind of just looked at it out of the corner of my eye thinking, this guy's kind of a crackpot, don't really know if he's on the level but I didn't trust government and the things that he was saying about the government. Well, as we know, he uncovered the biggest corrupt spying on Americans issue that we've ever had in this country, and he's now holed up in Russia. He's got a temporary asylum in Russia, waiting. I think he's probably waiting for this administration to move out of the White House before he does anything else. Anyway, he did announce today that he is a trained spy, not just a hacker working for the government. He says today, in USA Today, I was trained as a spy in sort of the traditional sense of the word, in that I lived and worked undercover overseas, pretending to work in a job that I'm not, and even being assigned a name that was not mine. The Master Secret Spiller tells NBC News at the first interview with the U.S. TV network. So anyway, interesting development there that Edward Snowden is a trained spy. Not really a big surprise to me, but what I kind of find interesting is also in the same day, where's my story? Oh, darn it. Our illustrious John Kerry thinks that Edward Snowden needs to man up and come home. So, you know, I'm going to man up and come home and face the Obama firing squad when in the same week the White House accidentally released the name of one of the CIA's top intelligence officials in Afghanistan. Just accidentally released it. If you believe it's an accident, I've got some swampland to sell you. You know, after what we saw in Benghazi and how he hung out those four Americans in Benghazi to dry, twist in the wind and to die, it looks like there's a target on the back of a CIA operative in Afghanistan. So, folks, I'm telling you, this is what the news is feeding you. It's really, really important for us as Americans, as patriots, to kind of read between the lines because the... You know what? I mean, it's so corrupt here. And I was sitting here thinking today, it's a pretty slow news week. There's not a bunch of stuff going on. You know, what am I going to talk about on the radio this week? Well, that's insane because there's just corruption left and right. I think we're just getting so used to the corruption, it's just kind of going in one ear, not the other. Just absolutely crazy. There's another story that I've been keeping my eye on. Last week, we learned that there was a U.S. Marine held in Mexico on gun charges. Evidently, a U.S. Marine from Southern California was driving around in Southern California, living in his car, from what I understand, accidentally drove across the Mexican border and was picked up by the border agents over there. And now he's being held on gun running charges. And there's no help from the U.S. military. There's no help from the U.S. government. No Obama help. Of course, you know, when he's setting up U.S. CIA agents all over the place and ambassadors, I'm sure he's, you know, this poor guy doesn't stand a chance, Snowball's chance in July of getting any help from the Obama administration. Anyway, these stories are all posted up on Culture Vigilante, the Facebook page. You can read more about it. We'll be following those stories as we go on. I just think that it's just really important for folks to follow these issues and to spread the word to your neighbors and friends about these kinds of things. Kind of just drop little bugs in their ear so that they're not, you know, everybody's engaged in their own life and they're not paying attention to the media as they should, or they're just taking in what the media has to feed them and they're not discerning it and reading between the lines and looking at all the other details that are not getting reported in the mainstream. I have a Yankee Doodle alert for you folks here on a local level, and this is a very good example of why folks need to read between the lines, because we had a situation here. Our legislative session just ended last week, and we had a number of hot button issues. One of them was Common Core. And we talked a little bit about this last week. It failed. Well, it depends on who you talk to. Kurt Barr is a representative here in my area, in my county, sponsored a bill, was a great bill when he submitted it to the legislature. By the time it got out of the legislature, it was absolutely nothing like what it began as, does absolutely nothing for the people, the students, the kids, the taxpayers of Missouri, as far as eliminating Common Core. But what it does do is it kicks the can down the road a couple of years so that while the very tenacious folks who went to Jefferson City to fight this issue will probably not give up on it, because I know them personally and they are tough fighters, most of the folks by the time next year rolls around or the year after that, Common Core is just going to be part of their daily lives. They will have accepted it. They can't fight it. It's too big. There will be another crisis. They won't even be thinking about this. But Kurt Barr is crediting the grassroots. There's a story. I'll post it up on Culture Vigilante Facebook page and on Missouri Grassroots Coalition. in the Missouri Times about Barr and Dean credit grassroots for Common Core bill success. Telling you folks, they're going to spin this thing as a success because they got something, even if it's a piece of garbage, through the legislature. They're going to credit these things as a success. And I'm telling you, a Republican legislature with common anti-Common Core platforms in the Republican Party platform, this shouldn't be hard. You shouldn't have to fight this hard. Indiana got some great legislation passed. There's no reason why Missouri can't do it too. So, folks, I'm telling you, there's your Yankee Doodle for today. We'll just play the Yankee Doodle clip. If I can find it, there it is. Okay, another thing that I wanted to bring to your attention today, we're going to have Paul Ellison on again next week. We've been following this Ligaris case in Camden County, Missouri, and we've stressed it many times. Every time Paul comes on, we stress this is not just something that's happening in the middle of Missouri, you know, in a small flyover country in the middle of the county, you know, country in the middle of the state. This is happening everywhere, folks. And here's something that I just wanted to bring to your attention. I got a hold of a court order written by Judge Aaron Koeppen, K-O-E-P-P-N. He's the Associate Circuit Judge in the 3rd Division for Camden County, Missouri. And he wrote an order appointing a guardian ad litem in this case to the Ligaris children, the two Ligaris children, the boy Ligaris and girl Ligaris. It's pretty standard stuff, you would think, but here's some things I just want people to be aware of what goes on. When the fix is in, what you're up against, and what, unless you're involved in the case, you don't know what's going, you just don't know what goes on behind closed doors inside a courthouse. Anyway, the matter comes before the court on a motion to appoint a guardian ad litem. Court appoints a guardian ad litem for the minor children pursuant to sections 452.423 and 452.490 Missouri Revised Statutes. And it goes on to state all of these issues. Well, there's a couple of things that I want to bring to your attention. First of all, this judge, and I don't know how to pronounce his name, so I'm sorry for mispronouncing it, Judge Koeppen, issued this order April 30th of 2014. There is no revised Missouri statute 452.490. And later on in the order, he cites another Missouri statute, 452.523.2.1. They don't even exist. This judge is ordering a guardian, appointing a guardian ad litem, citing these statutes under which the reasons why he's ordering this guardian ad litem. And these statutes don't even exist in Missouri law. So, and that's just the minor part of it. Okay, here's a couple of other things. And I've heard so many of these cases, folks. I'm telling you, it's just appalling. And I just kind of want to give you a window into the world of what happens to people when they go into a courtroom and they have to fight these custody battles. Okay, so within this order, the guardian ad litem shall have an attorney-client relationship with the minor children, and all communications between guardian ad litem and the minor children shall be privileged and shall not be disclosed by the minor children or the guardian ad litem except as he/she deem appropriate in the effective representation of the children, and then only generally and not specifically. Now read this. Neither of the parties nor their counsel shall seek to invade this privilege either directly or indirectly, nor make any attempt to seek disclosure of confidential communications from either of the minor children or the guardian ad litem. Now, I can tell you in this case, the Ligaris children are 7 and 8. So this is effectively a gag order issued against the parents to the children. So imagine if you're going through any kind of a custody case and you're being issued a gag order, you can't talk to your children can't talk to you. You can't talk to your children about what goes on elsewhere. Just Just something to think about, folks. Now, there is nothing, absolutely nothing, in the Missouri Revised Statutes that says the parents can't have communication with their kids. But this is what the judge is ordering. And here's something else I want you to think about, too. Upon the presentation of a certified copy of the order to any agency, hospital, organization, school, person, or office, including the clerk of this court, pediatrician, psychologist, psychiatrist, or police department, the aforementioned shall permit the guardian ad litem to inspect and copy any records relating to the minor children and his or her parents. Okay, at first glance, you might think that's something reasonable. And, you know, in some, if there's reasonable suspicion to think that an outside party needs to have these records, but there is nothing, absolutely nothing, in this order that requires a guardian ad litem to go to a judge to ask for permission to provide evidence that there's a need to gain this much information. So once a guardian ad litem comes into your life through whatever means, they have total authority to come in and just take control of any kind of records without getting the permission of a judge to present a reasonable proof that they need it. So this is just the latest, or one of the latest developments in the Lagares case. Folks, this is just a horrible, horrible situation. We're going to keep on top of it. We're going to have Paula Liston on of American Spring 2011. There are obviously some other developments that we want to talk about. So, we'll have him on again next week to kind of fill us in on the developments. I just kind of want to keep this story in front of you alive. And again, I want to stress, people do not understand what goes on behind the closed doors of a courtroom when they're dealing with these kind of custody cases. It's just appalling, the things that are going on between families, how children are being put in the middle and their best interests are really not being taken care of in this case. And we will probably go into the industry that the legal profession has become, especially when it relates to the guardian ad litem issue and foster care and the things that go on, and not only in Missouri, but across the country. I mean, we'll keep you updated on the Justina Pelletier case and all of the things going on there. But folks, it's absolutely amazing. So just stay tuned for that, and we'll have some more on that next week. Anyway, as I said, my board is all lit up. I know that I have three people calling in, and my board's just lit up all across the place. So we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back and talk to the folks from Remembering the Sultana and get into all the details. When I was doing research for this interview over the last week, I'd never heard of this disaster, the largest maritime disaster in American history, folks. I was never taught about it in school, never heard of it. It just amazes. I was just totally floored when I saw the clips of it and started looking into it. It sounds like a fabulous story. I think it's going to make a great movie, and you can have a hand in making this happen. So we're going to take a real quick break, and we'll come right back, and we will talk to Mark Marshall.
It really is time for the people of America to take up pitchforks.
Okay, is that you, Mark? Hello? Oh.
No matter what time of year it is, it's never too early to start preparing for the holidays. And here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we're thinking of Christmas now. Why? Because we've set an ambitious goal for ourselves to raise $2,000. That's right, we want to raise $2,000 in 2013 to help some Missouri families who may be struggling in this Obama economy to provide a magical Christmas morning for their children. Last year, in 2012, Missouri Grassroots Coalition touched the lives of 15 families because of the generosity of conservatives across the state who provided us with the means to pay off their layaway accounts on Christmas Eve. This year, we'd like to be able to help twice that number of families, and we're asking you to help us with that goal. please go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on the Secret Santa tab. All the details are there for you to send us what you can by PayPal, check, or money order. We want to thank all who contributed last year for their generosity and hope that you will all help us continue to prove that charitable giving works best in a constitutional republic.
Is life so dear or peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God! I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
We're back. This is Lisa Payne Nager. You're listening to Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. And I'm very excited to have my next guests on the show with me today. I want to send out a special thank you to Bob McCarty for putting me onto these folks. This is a real exciting project for a lot of reasons. Not necessarily political in nature, but maybe a little bit so. Just something that, you know, just every once in a while something comes across your desk and you kind of see some correlations. You know, most of us are just absolutely disgusted and enthralled with all of the corruption, and we think that we've never dealt with corruption like this in our history. Well, you know, when you learn about something like this, well, maybe we have. And we have three wonderful gentlemen on with us tonight, all from the Hollywood movie scene, as I understand it. They all have very long and very impressive resumes. I'm just going to really quickly skim over it, and I'll let them do the talking as far as their career goes. Mr. Matthew Egan is a managing partner of Image Freedom, a San Antonio-based marketing consultant agency, and I am guessing he is the fire behind this Kickstarter initiative into raising funds for this great project. And Jim Michaels began his career producing the NBC series Midnight Caller, also co-produced Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman, and Nick's Game, and the initiator of the return of the Sultana, Mr. Mark Marshall, began his career with a little company called Lucas Films. You might remember that one from the earlier The Empire Strikes Back days. Also, production assistant for More American Graffiti, Star Wars, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Indiana Jones, The Goonies, and on and on and on. Gentlemen, thank you so much for coming on my show tonight and telling us about your great project. I am so thrilled to have you with me.
Thank you for having us, Lisa.
Likewise. Thank you for having us.
Yeah,
okay.
Thrilled to be here.
Okay, so all of you are out in California, I guess, trying to raise money for this great project. Mark, let's start with you. And why don't you kind of give us an overview of how you came across this particular project and what it's all about?
Okay, well, I actually came across it through my brother, who discovered the story at Andersonville National Park when he was visiting the prison site in 2001. I was actually in London working on a film, and he emailed me and said, I have the project that you and I need to do together. We had been talking about possibly doing some documentaries together. And the story fascinated me, just like everyone else. I had never learned it in school. I came to it very late. But just the power of the story and the impact that it had on those soldiers and families just got under my skin and has stayed with me and has actually kind of intensified over the years. But my brother is the one who really found it, and we actually started working on it about 12 years ago, interviewing descendants of some of the survivors and some of the ones who died, including an original son and an original daughter of Union soldiers who survived the Sultana. I mean, our direct link to the Civil War. They both have since passed away, but we were fortunate to get them on tape. And we continue to do that. We're in the final stages now. We're doing some additional interviews. We're doing B-roll. We've upgraded from just regular resolution to high resolution video, and we're seeking funds now to try to finish the documentary, to do our post-production work, to add the voices that we know we're going to need, and we have an incredible wellspring of talent where those voices are concerned, and we can get into that as well, but I want to let the other gentleman talk too.
Okay, well, who can tell me? I mean, just I really can you give me an overview about what this is? Because I through history, all through my schooling, you know, I'm a woman of a certain age, I've been around a while, never heard of this. I live in the Midwest. This is about a steamboat. I'm from St. Louis. Never heard of this. Why?
There's a good reason for that. Oh, go ahead, Jim.
I was going to say one of the points is that, you know, just like what happens in the press today, sometimes, you know, if a relatively famous person dies in the morning and a very famous person dies in the afternoon, the very famous person gets all the press and everybody talks about it. Nobody talks about the other one. Or when the government, you know, wants to hide things, they take it out the trash on the Friday news. They release it at 4 o'clock on Friday, and hopefully over the weekend nobody really picks it up. I think the biggest thing that happened here was Abraham Lincoln was shot about the same time that this boat went down. And so the press was all over the president, you know, being assassinated. It was a big news story. But to ignore and not cover the loss of life of American soldiers, I mean, my God, I mean, more people died in it than died at Pearl Harbor.
Wow,
These were American servicemen, and I'm not taking anything away from the heroes from Pearl Harbor. They've been well honored, as they should be. But for these men to have survived the Civil War, to have survived the prison camps in the South, you know, and you know, to have survived Andersonville and all the other, you know, horrors of a prison camp, to finally think you're actually on your way home, and to have the government, you know, through robbery and malfeasance, you know, not take care of our veterans coming home. I mean, can you imagine if a plane crashed with 30 soldiers coming back from Afghanistan? That would be obviously national news and a horrible tragedy, and I hope that never happens. But imagine, over 1,000 or over 1,500 soldiers dying in one single incident. And that's what this was. These were American soldiers, and they need their place in history. It's not, you know, other than that, just they need your place in history, and it should be in the history books.
So the long and the short of it, give me a little detail on exactly what happened on the Sultana. These are after the Civil War, a steamboat transporting American soldiers home. Up which river?
April 27th, 1865. And Mark, jump in and correct me if I get any details wrong, but this is a ship that was supposed to be carrying 367 people, and we're loading up 2,300. I mean, when you hear it, your brain says that has to be a typo, that something cannot be right there. But these are literally, you know, like Jim was saying, you know, men that were coming back from being POWs, meaning they fought in the Civil War and they were captured. Many of them had lost half their body weight and hadn't spoken to their families. We're talking about no telephone, no ability to, you know, maybe you get a letter out, but there's a war going on, and you know, you've lost complete contact. You're on your way home, and you're packed in like sardines. So you've won the war, and for what? You know, to be I don't know. Mark probably has better access to the details on the specifics, but the boiler just couldn't handle the load, and so as the Sultana went along, it was damaged, it was repaired, and they tried to make the most of it, but it came down to the fact that they were being paid by the head for who they were loading up into the boat. So, of course, the captain said, hey, the more the merrier, even though, you know, we're talking about almost 2,000 more people than we should have had.
So where did the voyage start, and where did it end, ultimately end?
The soldiers were picked up at Vicksburg. The Sultana actually ran the New Orleans to St. Louis line and carried the news of President Lincoln's assassination to the southern cities because the telegraph lines were down. So The Sultana had already achieved some importance. On the way back from New Orleans, they stopped in Vicksburg because J. Cass Mason, the captain, had been promised a load of Union soldiers. And as Matthew said, at $5 a head per soldier and $10 a head per officer, there was money to be made, especially in the hard times at the end of the war. And unfortunately, J. Cass Mason had access to a very, very corrupt Union officer named Colonel Reuben Hatch, who had a history of criminal behavior within the Army, but had a brother who was a confidant of Abraham Lincoln and was always able to squeak by and squeak out. And, you know, he went to Vicksburg, became a quartermaster, was in charge of mustering out the troops there. And unfortunately, those two men were able to get those 2,300 soldiers on board. And they set sail for Camp Chase, Ohio. And just north of Memphis, at 2 o'clock in the morning on the 27th of April, the boiler, which had been under repair in Vicksburg, just gave out and exploded, and killing hundreds and hundreds of men instantly. And the resulting fire claimed more men. And actually, these men who were sick, many of whom didn't know how to swim, had a choice to make. They could either burn to death or they could drown or try to swim. And that's why there was such a large loss of life.
I can't even imagine the amount of research that must go into a project like this to get those kinds of details. How do you go about doing that?
Well, I'll tell you, we had two really great books to draw from. One is from a lawyer in Memphis named Jerry Potter, called The Sultana Tragedy. The other is from a gentleman who I think was a security police officer on a college campus in Chicago, named Gene Salaker, who wrote Disaster on the Mississippi. Those are the two authoritative books that we've drawn from. However, one of the men involved who survived the Sultana, Chester Berry, later in life went around to all the survivors that he could find and got their eyewitness accounts and published a book. And so we actually have dozens and dozens of first-hand accounts of these soldiers who, and you know, and how they survived and how they lived since then.
So approximately how many survivors did they estimate having?
There were probably about 400 to 500 survivors.
Out of 2,300?
Yes, 1,800 died.
Wow.
Some bodies were never found and were never identified, and many of them are buried in the National Cemetery in Memphis with the grave marker that says unknown soldier.
Oh. Well, the Mississippi River, I mean, it is a respectable river. You don't swim across that river and survive it. It's, you can't do
Mississippi.
It.
Yeah.
That's right.
Imagine
having
been in a prison camp.
And weak and sick.
Well,
right.
Especially because the Mississippi at that point in April was in flood stage from the winter snows up north. And the river at one point was 4 miles wide.
Wow. We've seen that here before. That's true. Oh, my gosh. Just amazing. So how do you go about filming a movie like this?
I'll tell you, we're doing it I hate to say we're doing it Ken Burns style, but, you know, Ken Burns has set a standard, has developed a visual style and an emotional style that really everyone, I think, aspires to. And with historical subjects like this and sensitive subjects, you don't want to, you know, you don't want to do a lot of recreations and cheapen it. You want to let the soldiers tell their stories through their words and then through whatever pictures are available. Unfortunately, there are only two pictures that we know of the Sultana that exist. One is at dock in St. Louis, and the other was taken 19 hours before the boat exploded in Helena, Arkansas, and you can see the overloaded boat. You can't see the faces, but you can see the figures just crowding that boat, and it's one of the most powerful images I've ever seen.
That I can't even imagine. The visual that brings up just makes it's like slave trade or something. It's just amazing that just how we could treat Americans. Do you get into the politics at all of it? Can you go into the research and find out, you know, what was going on in the administration at the time? What were the orders? Who was giving the orders? Do we get into any of that story at all?
I think you have to, and I think, you know, Jim and Matthew, please feel free to jump in, but I think you have to get into the politics because the politics were the reason that those men's lives were sacrificed. And it wasn't just soldiers. There were also passengers, men, women, and children who died as well. So I think you have to be able to get into the politics to explain how it came to be. The greed putting the greed before before humans.
And there's certainly parallels from a modern perspective on, you know, overreaching from a profit standpoint, and at the same time from a government corruption standpoint. I think it's a wonderful example historically of both, you know, business ethics as well as a push for accountable government. And you know, we see that in the news today. You know, I've felt a connection between this story and Benghazi, because it's a situation where we want to know exactly what happened, and we deserve to know exactly what happened, and the people who died deserve to have their messages told. And so, you know, comparing the reach of a story like Benghazi with, you know, a handful of people who passed away, which is a tragedy. You know, here we are going back to a time of our country that we're very proud of, you know, fighting for the country that we want it to be. And and here we are not remembering, you know, 1800 that passed away in that way. You know, the parallel can be seen in the ferries that sank just recently. I mean, the message here from a history book standpoint, from a history curriculum standpoint, is incredibly important. But I mean, I think it's also something that adults can look at. That this is an example of why you don't, you know, put profit before humanity. And this is what can happen. I mean, 1,800 people gone. And so just thinking about that number, I mean, we're talking about more lives lost than in the Titanic disaster. And yet, you know, we've got the big James Cameron movie for Titanic. But think about every you know, wife waiting home, every mother, every you know, son and daughter, and everybody that was affected by this. Every single minute of that longing and that they probably never got an answer either. And so it's just, you know, we want to give them that, you know, for their spirit, for our spirit as a country, we want that closure for this, you know, this event. It should not be something that somebody goes, oh, I've never heard of that. What? Wait, Sultana, how do you spell that? Like, kind of a big deal.
Absolutely. So let's talk a little bit. You kind of touched on it at the top of the interview, a little bit about the human interest and going back to the roots and the lives, the actual lives that were touched by this story and the descendants that were left behind and the stories that they tell. Will we hear any of that in your movie?
Oh, absolutely. There are more stories than we could possibly even say here. You know, one of the things that stood out for me was that just before the disaster, the Union Army had come through and confiscated all the rafts, all the skiffs, you know, all the boats that the people in the Memphis area, you know, and over in Marion, Arkansas area had, because, you know, it was Confederate territory, and they were afraid that they would go out and take pot shots at the returning soldiers. But after the disaster, while the boat was burning, many of those people who had their skiffs confiscated lashed together logs with ropes, and went out and saved many of the men who were fighting for their lives. And these were Confederate men who were mistrusted, and yet they saved these lives. So it just shows that the war was over. They were brothers again, and they sacrificed, you know, they risked their lives to save those men who just weeks before were enemies.
This sounds amazing. I can't wait to see this movie. So let's talk a little bit about getting this movie made. Mr. Egan, I'm imagining this is where you step in. Are you the fire behind the Kickstarter campaign?
Believe it or not, I actually came in, I wouldn't quite say the middle, but you know, late into the beginning. We had done a Kickstarter for Sean Astin, who will be narrating the project, and he has a talk radio show based out of Los Angeles. We've done a Kickstarter for that. And then Leah Savoli, who's co-producing the Sultana, as well as a incredibly talented Kickstarter expert and marketer and outreach person. And she and I have, this is actually our third Kickstarter that we're working on together. We worked on an art book as well as on Sean Astin's project. So Sean spoke to me, and we had a call, and I asked him, I said, you know, I have never executive produced anything. I actually could not define what that does. This is a serious phone conversation we had. I actually could not tell you what the responsibilities are. He's like, well, Matthew, you need to go out and you need to get money. He's like, is it that simple? He says, yep. And so, you know, this is why we've done this before. Let's go do this again. So, the internet outreach and the, you know, between Facebook and you know, social media, Twitter, all of these pieces, and then at the same time leveraging, you know, personal connections. I know that Mark and Sean have both dug deep in their personal archives to pull out, you know, old Goonies press kits and just truly one of a kind pieces that you're not likely to find, you know, on eBay or at a convention and whatnot. I know that I have to give a lot of credit to Mark for actually hand carrying posters from the Goonies to the cast's homes that were within the Los Angeles spectrum, and he had these posters hand signed by this cast. And so everybody that everyone's touched in the lives and the network and everything has been completely tapped into to make sure that we can muster the support. And it's been an uphill battle. I mean, I know that Mark, I don't know if you want to jump into the earlier campaign history.
Well, I'm actually a little embarrassed to say that we had a failed campaign. We started it back in February, I believe, and we were failing miserably. And right about that time, I had called Sean Astin, and who I've known for 30 years. And by the way, Jim Michael, who I've also known for 30 years, has been on board for the last 12 years and has been ready to lend any advice, any expertise, anything to Mike, my brother, and I, and that means more to me than anything. So Jim's always been there, and then I called Sean and asked him if he would consider narrating the documentary, and he took one look at the Kickstarter campaign and said, not only will I narrate, but I'll executive produce with Jim, but you need to cancel the campaign right now, which we did, and I'm glad we did, because it made me realize I knew nothing about Kickstarter campaigns or any crowdfunding campaigns, and it has been quite an education, I have to say. But you know, we have 7 days left to go, about 6.5, and we still have about $28,000 of our $75,000 that we have to raise. But you know, I mean, I've been very gratified at the backers that we've had and the level of interest, and these people have come to love the story. And made it their mission, you know, to see this documentary made. And so they've been wonderful. And, you know, I expect now, especially, you know, Lisa, with, you know, shows like yours, that more people will want to check it out and will back us, and I think we'll make it.
Well, it's just amazing that the journey that you've gone on to get this far, and you're so close. So, for someone like me, who's, you know, maybe not as immersed in the social media thing as I should be, or maybe to some of my older listeners, how do we deal with Kickstarter? And is there another way to deal with helping you raise funds for this movie?
The wonderful thing about Kickstarter is that all of the payment processing is done through Amazon, and so I know there's definitely a portion of the audience, I'm sure a large portion of the audience, that still does not you know, shop online. But I think one of the aspects that allowed Kickstarter to become kind of the main crowdsource option comes from that relationship with Amazon, where that's the payment gateway. And so if you have an Amazon account, you can back a Kickstarter. And, you know, I know that we've taken check donations. We had... Mark, Ray Appleton, am I saying that name correctly?
Yes.
We had a wonderful moment on his show, and that brought a check donation, and there's a process with Kickstarter that we can put that in there. You know, hell, I can take credit card over the phone if it comes down to it. But
Well, let me ask you this. Are you guys going to be out here in St. Louis? Does any of this include coming on site and filming on site?
Well, yes. It may not be Jim or Matthew or I, but my brother Mike, who is also a producer and is the one who kind of initiated this whole thing, and the director, Jeff Hoopengarner, will both be traveling, you know, back to Memphis, to Vicksburg, to St. Louis, to Ohio, to get some additional B-roll. So they certainly will be in the area.
Okay, awesome. Well, we know because
we just left St. Louis.
Oh, did you?
Sean and I were there just under the arch filming a segment on the Show Me State and kind of telling that story. And let me tell you, it's not easy to get a good angle of that arch when you're sitting under it.
You need a wide-angle lens.
Yeah, I need a wide-angle phone, I think is what it is.
Oh, yeah. It's large. Well, we know here, you know, we're kind of we're conservative political talk radio show here. We're very grassroots, and we know how the grassroots works. And many a successful campaign has been launched with small donations from large amounts of people. So we know that every little bit helps, and it's easy to do. So you can go to SultanaDocumentary.com, and there is a direct link to the Kickstarter page on that page, along with some fabulous, fabulous clips about this story and about this entire event.
And Lisa, you can also go to www.rememberthesultana.com, and that will take you directly to the Kickstarter page. Remember the Sultana is the rallying cry. Is the call to action that the descendants who meet every year now to, you know, honor their ancestors and to get the word out, that's their call to action. And so we have appropriated that with their blessing. And so it's very easy. Just rememberthesultana.com, take you directly to the Kickstarter site.
Gentlemen, I so appreciate you coming on and telling us the story. I mean, really did open my eyes. It's riveting, really. This story is riveting. And since it's so close to home, most of the folks here in Missouri should get behind this and support this and see this. And you will not, folks, your kids are not going to read about this in the Common Core curriculum that is initiated here in Missouri. So they're not going to get this history. You need to take them to the movie. Thank you so much.
Yeah, these are American veterans. These are war veterans. They're American heroes. They need to be remembered.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yes.
Thank you, gentlemen. And we're gonna stay on top of this and keep in touch with us and let us know how this is going. We're glad to be of help in any way.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. All right, we'll take a break and we'll be right back.
Thanks.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners, show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
When a person dies and is buried, it seems there's certain voodoo priests who have the power to bring him back to life.
Horrible.
It's worse than horrible because a zombie has no will of his own. You see them sometimes walking around blindly with dead eyes, following orders, not knowing what they do, not caring.
You mean like Democrats?
Our well-being at home and our leadership abroad are inextricably linked. Our friends and allies must again be able to trust us. From Israel to Colombia, from Poland to the Philippines, our allies and friends have to know that we will be reliable and consistent and determined. And our foes can have no reason to doubt our resolve because peace really does come through strength.
Just when you thought it was all over, when you thought it was time to hang it all up, Lisa is back.
This is Lisa Payne Nager. You're listening to Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. We just had a great interview with Mark Marshall, Jim Michaels, and Matthew Egan of Remembering the Sultana, and they're trying to get that Kickstarter project off the ground, and they wanted me to mention to you, Kickstarter is an all-or-nothing deal. You know, you either raise the entire amount of money or you get nothing at all. So, and they're only like $28,000 shy. So if you have an opportunity to send them a couple of bucks, send them a couple of bucks, because it's a riveting story, folks. Go to the website and watch the videos that they've got, the clips there that they have, Remembering the Sultana. They've also got a Facebook page as well. You can go there, Remembering the Sultana, and just fabulous. And like I said, you're not going to get that history anywhere in Missouri textbooks, history textbooks, folks. So, and it's such a big part of our history, so we want to get that out there. Okay, continuing on. The media, you know, and like they mentioned in the last interview, you know, folks, it's really your responsibility. You have the ability to control the media with how you respond to it. If you just suck it up with a straw and you let them spoon feed you, you're going to get what you get. And we know now today in America, we do not have an objective media. And with the onset of conservative talk radio, that's begun to change a little bit. We try to every day make inroads, you know, the new media, the blogging media, and all of these things have helped a little bit, but we've got a lot of work to do. And on the line with me tonight, I have a wonderful young man, Mr. Owen Schroyer. He is a radio personality here in St. Louis. He is an AM talk show host for 1380, and I've got it, 1380 KXFN AM radio here in St. Louis. And we're kind of crossing paths here, and we're going to put our heads together tonight to kind of talk about how we can work together across all of these media lines. I'm internet radio, he's AM radio, and we have all of these other media outlets that we can talk to get the conservative message out. Thanks for being on with me tonight, Owen. I'm glad to have you.
Well, glad to be here. And I actually just started off just like you. My show that I have now was originally on the internet, still is on the internet, so you got to start somewhere. I mean, I think it's all moving online eventually anyway. I believe most of my listeners are still online. But it's what it is. It's real media, and you made such a great point about how, you know, the people control the media. They really do by choosing what they tune into. And I just support people who don't have a teleprompter in front of them, don't have a talking point fed to them by some corporate head, and don't have basically an agenda, as you so well stated earlier. So I'm for anyone who's independent like you, grassroots starter, and though we may disagree on some things, we can disagree on the grassroots things and the simple things like the values stated on your website, limited government, state sovereignty, physical responsibility, fair taxation. So I like crossing paths with people like that.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, I mean, even the most conservative of us disagree from time to time, and it's been that way through history, but we can work that out. You know, but if you agree on the basic principles, you're good to go. And there are so many folks out there who are so illiterate regarding the Constitution, the basic principles, their basic rights, and the foundational freedoms that were given to us by our founding fathers. So, you know, we as a conservative movement, as a Tea Party, as a grassroots movement, have been really good at bolstering that message within our own bubble.
And getting back to the media for a second here, the media always wants to talk about things like gay rights or racial issues, but you never hear them talking about things like limited government and state sovereignty. So when you ask, you know, the common public, well, everyone has a stance on, you know, abortion or gay marriage or one of the main media talking points, but nobody has any comments about limited government, state sovereignty, you know, very basic things like that. As you said, the Constitution, they probably couldn't even name most of the Bill of Rights. So I think it's back to starting to preach that and to inform the people of those, and then they can, you know, basically re-embrace them.
Absolutely. So tell me this one. How do you regarding with the different medias, how do you see the target audiences? Because the Tea Party has got I'm very happy to see the younger aspect of the Tea Party kind trying to swell a little bit. It started out, the Tea Party was pretty much the older generation kind of pushing this. You know, we were the ones that kind of lived through more of the generations of watching the decline of the country. But how do you see this whole media being able to target all of these different demographics?
Well, that's a great point and a great question, and that's kind of how I got started because just a brief background on me. My whole life growing up, I was into sports. I was a sports writer. You know, I knew I wasn't going to be an athlete, so I took up writing in high school, carried it on through college, writing for papers, websites, did sports talk radio for 2 years, and a light flicked on, and I got introduced to, you know, new media, if you will, the non-dinosaur media, and all of a sudden it was cool to me because I'd never been interested in politics or anything like that anymore. So all of a sudden it was cool to me. And one of the things that I kind of like to say is that about at least my show, and I'm sure even shows like yours, is that people have never heard this type of news or these type of thoughts. People have never heard an interview about a ship that was sank, you know, in the 20s, wasn't it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Civil War.
So this is all kind of, it's like they've never heard something to it before. And I'd never heard anything like conservative talk radio before I started listening and listening to Tea Party candidates in politics. You know, that's when I became interested. So my hope is with the grassroots coalition that you've started, my show and other grassroots shows that are starting out there, is that we can reach a demographic that isn't there, people who aren't even tuning in to any media other than sports or pop culture or music or something like that. And we can bring them in with the very foundations that we have, and they can embrace those as well. That's kind of what got me started. Just as like, well, this is cool to me. I've never seen it before. So I think that's how we can reach out to people who just don't hear it enough.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let me ask you this, because I'm pretty sure we're of different generations. And, you know, the younger kids, I'm very, very heartened by the fact that I am seeing more young people get engaged and involved. What do you think it is that is sparking the interest of these young folks in the first place, that they're starting to catch on? I mean, they're not necessarily all paying taxes, you know, and jobs are hard to find and that kind of thing. But what do you think that it is that's finally starting to turn some heads in the millennials?
I think that it's two things. I think one, they're sick of the propaganda. I think they've seen it, they recognize it, and they're just sick of it. It's nonsense. You know what I'm talking about? The mainstream media. I mean, I could go on forever. But I think they're just sick of it. They want things that are more real. And I also think that, you know, part of it has to do with this whole kind of technological revolution that the millennials have had. And they're starting to see an attack on that, an attack on the Internet, an attack on free speech, the NSA spying on them, you know, or using the NSA to tap into phones or however you want to, you know, however you want to phrase that stuff. And they kind of see their privacy and their very, you know, fundamental freedoms being, I guess, encroached upon. And so they're kind of starting to fight back, if you will, and be anti-establishment or you know, just be saying, I'm sick of the NSA or I don't think we need the NSA, which is something you never really heard before. Usually it's like, oh, sure, you know, go big government, go ahead and do whatever you want. The millennials aren't going to raise an issue. But I think it's those two things kind of happening all at the same time that's kind of causing a change of paradigm. And also, like you said, the growth of real grassroots media that's actually, you know, trying to say things that they actually believe and that's actually true.
Yeah, absolutely. So do you personally know any people who voted for Obama who have turned tide?
Yes, actually, most of my friends who did vote for him in his first campaign have seen, and actually, I guess it worked out better for them because now they're even more awakened or more in tune to the political theater that's going on now than they ever were. So Obama's been such a big failure, I think, that many of his supporters are completely changing face. But then on the other hand, I don't know if you're seeing this too, the other side of the supporters are loving him even more and becoming more believing in his policies and everything. So it's really a strange separation amongst liberal-minded Democrats who probably don't know much about the history of the Democratic Party or the beliefs of liberalism. Otherwise, I think they might have changed the tide a while ago.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting lesson in human sociology. I always thought that politics was much more about psychology and sociology than it ever had anything to do with political science. I mean, just,
well, and I
you know.
Think that's kind of what, you know, the original idea of the American government was, but unfortunately now we're seeing where, you know, big businesses, big banks can line the pockets of some of these politicians, and then, you know, it's basically when you have politicians in the Congress, in the Senate, in the White House that have sold out their beliefs, well, this is what you get.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay, so tell me a little bit about your show. When is it on, and where can we find it?
My show will be kicking off in an hour on 1380 Extreme Talk Radio in St. Louis. The local terrestrial signal is 1380 AM. I suggest most people download the app, however, for a smartphone or tablet, 1380 The X. And also, all my shows are archived on my YouTube page, which is just my name, Owen Schroyer. And I also do live video there as well. And my show, most people would probably file it under the conspiracy theory, portion of their brains. But I try to deal very little with conspiracy theories, and I really just cover news and then kind of give a Tea Party or anti-establishment point of view of that news, using historical things, using my experience in life, articles I've been reading for the last year and a half. It's really kind of a growing process for me, which has kind of, I think, helped produce good quality radio, is because I've been learning along the way. Like I said, I've been involved with sports my whole life. It wasn't until I had to cover the Boston Marathon bombing that
really?
I even paid attention to any of this. Yeah, I continue to tell people to this day that event literally changed my life, mainly because of the coverage it received by the mainstream media. And all the propaganda that I saw, all the lies, it really woke me up. And that's why I kind of contribute some of this new grassroots youth millennials coming to the Tea Party, is because they kind of have the same awakening after a while. Something has to click, you know. I mean, there's just so much. So you think eventually it's going to click with everyone.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the Boston bombing. So how involved were you covering? Were you on the ground there? What did you see?
No, I was just in sports talk radio in St. Louis at the time. So naturally, it was a huge, you know, issue we were talking about. We got all kinds of calls on it. So I wanted to be as informed as possible. So, you know, I never really caught up with any news like this. The only stations that were covering it were CNN, MSNBC, Fox. I mean, you know the big ones. And I was watching this coverage, and it didn't seem right. It felt like there was a lot of assumptions made. It turns out that was the case, you know, and it's just such – really what it is it's infotainment. And they'll just put out – they'll spout out any details they can find just to keep an audience when it turns out a lot of them weren't true. Following people like Ed Davis, who was the police commissioner in Boston at the time, looking at the records of Rich DeLaurier, who's the head of the FBI out there, and Carmen Ortiz, who's part of judicial, I forget her, but she's a big judge up in Boston, looking at her history. I mean, this whole thing just didn't seem right to me. There was a lot of irony surrounding this whole thing, and I naturally just became curious and wanted to look more into it, and that's what introduced me to the grassroots media, the alternative media, what I like to call the real media, because they were the only people covering it. All you were going to get out of any of the mainstream media was whatever the FBI said, whatever the Boston Police Commissioner said, who magically retired a couple months after that.
Right.
So, it literally changed my life. All I wanted to do was follow stuff like this, follow news, follow politics.
Well, that's amazing. So give me some dirt. Give me a little – what did you
well,
see
little,
being swept under the rug?
Well, very few people would probably know that Tamerlan Sarnath, who is the mastermind, apparently, according to the FBI, to the Boston bombing was a CIA operative and had been paid by the CIA. Few people would even connect the two dots that, well, here's the FBI saying that they have the picture of the suspect, but they don't know who it is? Really? The FBI already had been tracking Tamerlan Tsarnaev because he'd been going in and out of Russia. They'd already been tapping his phone. They knew who he was talking to, and as I stated before, he'd been a part of the CIA payroll. So I would really find it hard to believe that our FBI, that is so technologically advanced, couldn't even find out who Tamerlan Tsarnaev is when they have a picture. Just doesn't make sense to me. Amongst other things, the backpacks that blew up didn't match the backpacks they had on. That's kind of a minute detail. Maybe I can or can't prove that. You know, there was a tweet released by the Boston Globe just moments before the explosion saying that there was about to be a test explosion in front of the library, which is actually where it went off. But
wow,
the mainstream media never mentioned that. Yeah, it's really incredible. It's just amazing. And again, I can't sit here and say what happened, but I can definitely, you know, use my intellect and curiosity to at least try to filter out what's real and what's not. And I just know that most of the things, that the talking points in the mainstream media, is really not real.
That's amazing. Wow.
I mean, I tune in to CNN. I don't listen, but I like to flip through when I'm working in the radio during the day. I have the TV monitor on in front of me, and I'll just flip through MSNBC and CNN to see their talking points. You can pretty much assume that the exact opposite is true, is mostly what I have come to find.
And there just seems to be so little of investigative journalism, you know, people who really dig into the facts.
Well, the problem is, Lisa, is that they don't – there's – I don't know what it is. Maybe it was something that naturally we used to have that we don't have psychologically anymore because of the technology. But people just aren't as curious to find the truth. If they see it on TV in front of them, it's real. And they just assume it's real no matter what. And you always hear people saying, oh, you know, if they hear a story that is so, you know, outstanding to them, oh, you must have read it online. Well, therefore it isn't true because it wasn't on TV. Well, that's just not true anymore. Plenty of people start perfectly honorable and dignified publications online, just like yours and mine. You know, there's no reason to say that my opinion doesn't count any more than someone that's on CNN. If anything, I would say it counts more because I don't have millions of dollars from pharmaceuticals companies coming in. But it's funny how I never mentioned the fact that SSRI drugs have been tied to every major shooting in America in the last decade plus. I mean, of course they're not going to talk about that.
Yeah, amazing. It's follow the money. It's always about the money. There's
well,
always a money trail.
Unfortunately, that's a big culture issue that is, you know, it stems from the top. When the people at the top are greedy, it always trickles down.
Awesome. That's true. Very true. Well, you got a lot on the ball, Owen. You got a lot going on. So what can we expect on your show?
Well, you know what? Tonight I have a bunch of leftover news that I didn't get to last night. So I'm probably just going to be covering a litany of headlines, reading through some of these articles. I basically just like to cover all angles, mainstream media, alternative media, and I love to just read through all these articles, try to connect dots, relate history, see what we can find. And like I said, most of the time I find that the mainstream media is either blatantly deceiving people or just flat out wrong, and there's always something more to a story. So it just always intrigues me, and I plan on doing it tonight at 9, and I hope that you know, many of your audience wants to tune in.
Okay, we'll be there. Absolutely. I'll be there at 9.
All right, Lisa.
Okay, 1380 KXFN. There is an app, and I've posted that on Culture Vigilante on the Facebook page, Missouri Grassroots Coalition Facebook page. If you're in the St. Louis area, you can tune in to 1380, and we will have you back on again soon, Owen, to kind of maybe chew apart some of these issues that are coming up. Do you guys follow the Missouri legislature at all?
You know, I am actually – I won't say I'm really bad at that because I was covering what was going on in Jeff City a couple weeks ago. It was really hot and still is. Governor Jay Nixon is a hot topic right now. But I'm really more of a geopolitical national and international. That's more what I touch on during my show, but I like to try to stay in tune with the local legislation as well. I mean, Common Core, people are happy about the fact that we control it. I believe in 2017 it comes back up. Personally, I wasn't happy. I wish we would have just smashed it right now.
Yeah, I have a lot to say about that. That and I have said a little bit here on my show, that is a joke. That's the biggest Yankee Doodle piece of legislation I've ever seen. I'll tell you all about Yankee Doodle legislation when I get onto your show tonight. We'll talk about
that.
I like that
Yankee Doodle legislation. That's good.
Yeah, I've characterized a lot of what goes on in the cesspool of Jefferson City as Yankee Doodle, and we need to really educate the folks in Missouri, and I'm sure it's not just in Missouri, I'm sure it's all over the country, about how we are being snookered by our politicians. Even our Tea Party sweethearts are snookering us. They're messing with us, and it's a lot of Yankee Doodle.
Yep, you gotta make sure. It's tough to know who to trust these days.
You bet. Well, actually, once they're elected, you should never trust them. Okay,
yeah.
We'll see you tonight.
Thank you, Lisa.
At 9 o'clock. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Owen.
Bye. We'll be right back. We'll take a break.
Have you joined Missouri Grassroots Coalition yet? The results of the 2012 election proved that the grassroots conservatives need to work harder to make their voices heard in government. The best way for Missouri conservatives to make their voices heard is to join together within the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Network and show our elected that we are a strong, unified, conservative voice in Missouri. Go to the website, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and click on the Join tab. Give us your contact information so that we can keep you updated on the latest developments in Jefferson City and beyond. Also, sign up for Grassfire Alerts so that you can get immediate notifications when we need to call grassroots conservatives together in action. Use the MGC network to help your grassroots organization speak with a louder voice, combined with grassroots groups across the state. Together, we can strengthen the conservative voice in Missouri.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Our well-being at home and our leadership abroad are inextricably linked. Our friends and allies must again be able to trust us. From Israel to Colombia, from Poland to the Philippines, our allies and friends have to know that we will be reliable and consistent and determined. And our foes can have no reason to doubt our resolve, because peace really does come through strength.
Just when you thought it was all over, when you thought it was time to hang it all up, Lisa is back.
This is Lisa Payne Nager. You're listening to Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Want to thank Bob McCarty for putting me on to the great folks that are making this great documentary film, Remembering the Sultana. A few months ago, I had an opportunity to interview Bob. He's a great author. He's written two great books, and his latest book, The Clapper Memo, I had a short time to talk to him about it a few months ago, and I wanted to replay that interview for you guys again tonight. Very, very timely book for Bob to write in this day and age of all of the scandal going on, the Benghazi stuff and all of the hearings. And I think that everybody needs to pick up a copy of the Clapper Memo. I think it'll give you some insights as to how the inner workings of Washington, D.C. work or don't work, the inner workings of the military work or don't work when they're covering up scandals. Sit for a few minutes and listen to this interview with Bob McCarty.
We're back. This is Culture Vigilante. I'm Lisa Payne Nager, and you're listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio. We are back again. Happy to have him with us again is Bob McCarty. Bob McCarty is a great author. Ran into him at CPAC again this weekend. His latest book, The Clapper Memo, is flying off the shelves. A great way to bring you into the thought processes of this book is a synopsis from Bob's webpage. Is for 4 years after posing my initial set of questions to the DOD, I stand convinced that polygraph loyalists' blind loyalty to their century-old technology results not only in Americans in this country being falsely implicated and or convicted of crimes they did not commit, but it places Americans who wear the uniforms of their country in war zones around the world at higher than necessary risk of becoming casualties. Bob McCarty, what an amazing statement to make. Talking about our military and the safety there brings to mind Benghazi. Thanks for being with me.
Hey, thanks, Lisa. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, you know, I'm an Air Force veteran. I was an Air Force officer, you know, during the less exciting Cold War days. But nevertheless, you know, my dad served in World War II. All three of his brothers served in World War II at the same time. I'm as pro-military as far as pro the troops, pro the guys who are now an all-volunteer force. I'm as pro-military as anyone can be. Unfortunately, by writing books like the Clapper Memo, I have a lot of people in the higher echelons of the military pretty upset with me because I spent 4 years investigating basically this issue of DOD taking one of the best tools we have for interrogating enemy combatants and detainees and others who want to do us harm. They took the tool out of our guys' hands, and now all they're left with is the polygraph. And that is definitely not doing the job. And I'm trying to, you know, do the Paul Revere thing. We need to get the Navy SEALs and the Green Berets, give them back the best tool in their toolkit so they can, you know, wage this war. Right now they've got their hands tied behind their backs.
Okay, so you sent me an email earlier today. What is this green and blue thing? What is that? What is all that all about?
Yeah, green on blue attacks, or insider attacks, as they're also known, that is when an Afghan who's wearing a uniform for the Afghan military, as the Afghan National Army, Afghan National Police, or one of the country's security agencies, an Afghan in uniform working side by side with the American or coalition forces personnel, you know, you think this Afghan's your ally, and the next minute he's shooting you and your buddies. You know, so he's an insider. He's working alongside of you, but 1 minute he's your friend, the next minute he's killing you and your buddies. So that's what a green on blue attack is. The U.S. military didn't start keeping tabs or, you know, keeping a body count, so to speak, on that until 2007. And, in fact, since 2007, if I was to draw in your mind, visualize a graph where the far left, 2007, there are two attacks, and then go each year until 2012, and the graph goes straight up and to the right. And it's increased every year. The Pentagon denies that the polygraph doesn't work. They say it does work. But if it did work, why don't they tout it anymore? Why are the green on blue attacks happening? Why are we not vetting the Afghans that work alongside our troops before they're allowed to wage these attacks? And I go into a lot of in-depth detail. I interview Navy SEALs. I interview Green Berets who use the non-polygraph technology that has been banned by DOD. And, you know, I've interviewed law enforcement officers from all over the United States who use this non-polygraph technology very successfully. And, you know, I raise the question again. Law enforcement can use it, but DOD says no. It's all because there are insiders who I call the polygraph loyalists who will do anything and everything in their power to keep polygraph as the primary tool for use within DOD when it comes to, you know, interrogating prisoners or enemy combatants and the like. We have much better technology. It's been around for 40 years. It has just not been allowed to be used.
So What's the deal, Bob? Why are we doing this to our military? Why are we putting them in such in I mean, they're already in harm's way enough as it is, and the situation in the Middle East is unlike any other conflict I think that we've ever been involved in American history. Why are we treating our military so cavalierly with the, why are we taking their safety so much for granted and so casually?
Well, I think inside the military at the highest levels, there are people who are just as narcissistic or self-centered as the president right now. And, you know, they can move from a military job into the private sector, you know, with a defense contractor, perhaps with the companies that make the polygraph. You know, I'm speculating on that. Why we are, you know, doing this to our own guys, That's anyone's guess, except that I've got three memos. One of them was signed by James R. Clapper, Jr., the guy who's always in the news about the NSA scandal. He's the top intelligence official in the United States. You know, he got the title role on the book, but his memo was one of three that banned this newer technology instead of allowing it to be used. It had been proven at Gitmo. I've got the documents to prove it. That we interrogated prisoners for 30 days at Gitmo, got results like nobody's business, much better than polygraph gave us, and we were doing a 60-day test at Gitmo early on, back in 2003, when the war on terror was very young, and instead of a 60-day test, after 30 days, the Defense Intelligence Agency guys who were running the interrogation cell down there, they said, we don't need to go 60 days. We've seen enough. You know, this is great stuff. And that was in the fall of 2003. By January 2004, they initiated a two-year contract to use this non-polygraph technology at Gitmo. Well, 1 year into that contract, a polygraph loyalist by the name of Stephen Cambone, who was the very first Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence, he sent a team down to Gitmo, got rid of the non-polygraph equipment, reassigned the guy who had brought it in there, and put the polygraph back in place. You know what's happened since then? We've had 28% of the detainees at Gitmo have returned to the battlefield to fight against our guys. Had we used this interrogation technology to discover what their intentions were going to be after they left Gitmo, we never would have let them out.
Exactly. Okay, so let me ask you this. With all the complaining and the whining and crying that the left did over waterboarding and all of the interrogation techniques that were being used at Gitmo that were so inhumane, why did we not keep this advanced technology and just use that?
You know, this advanced technology, all it requires is a laptop computer, software, and a microphone. There's no physical contact with the detainee, with the enemy combatant. There's no countermeasures. If you do any research on polygraph, and I have a lot of it at theclappermemo.com, you know, you know that polygraph can be defeated countless ways. Edward Snowden, the NSA document leak guy, you know, he passed multiple polygraphs when he went to work for NSA, for CIA, for the NSA contractor, you know. A condition of his employment, having a security clearance, was to pass periodic polygraph. He obviously did it, but could he be trusted? I wouldn't say he could. Aldrich Ames, the famous CIA spy from years back, he passed the polygraph. You Google anyone who's been convicted of spying, if they were working for the CIA or the NSA or any, you know, government agency at the level in secret and above, there's a very good chance they had to pass a polygraph, you know, to maintain their employment. And they do. Our adversaries, the Russians, you know, at least the Cold War adversaries, the Russians, Chinese, you name it, they don't fear the polygraph because it's so obvious. Anyone can beat the polygraph. My cat could beat the polygraph. But this other technology, which I write about in the Clapper Memo, there are no countermeasures for it. And that's why law enforcement likes it. That's why these Green Berets and Navy SEALs liked it. And the only reason that it's that's not being used in DOD right now is because the polygraph loyalists are trying to protect their nest egg, their you know, where their bread is buttered.
There's a money trail. There's got to be a money trail. There's got to be a money trail. Okay, so
it's
I know
in the book.
I know that you have cited some very high-level elected sources in your book, Bob. Are you getting any feedback from anybody in Washington about what you found?
You know, I'm not surprised. I'm not yet. At CPAC, I had an opportunity to meet face-to-face for a few minutes with Rick Santorum because he was actually on the trail of this new technology and asking some tough questions of Stephen Cambone when he was the Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence. But he got thrown the answers he got to his questions were very doctored, let's say. And but Senator Santorum's people didn't know they were being, you know, fed a line of bull, okay? Jim Talent, he wrote some incredible language when he was a senator, and he wrote language that would have allowed this technology to be used by DOD. This was after it was banned for the first time. And that language was not, it did not pass. It wasn't inserted into the defense authorization bill the year he wrote it. But I did get a copy to Senator Talent's office. I'm hoping both of those gentlemen can help me. You know, I've got the people who've endorsed the book. I don't know if you've seen that, but the same man, a Chicago lawyer who served as the chief investigative counsel during the Clinton impeachment hearings, his name is David Shippers, he endorsed the book. He called it some of the finest investigative reporting I've seen in years, you know, words to that effect.
Yep.
I got a two-star Army general. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Anybody who's read Bob McCarty knows that you are the finest investigative reporter there is. This is riveting, and I don't want to give too much away because it's a great book. Bob, how can folks get your book besides going to theklappermemo.com?
Easiest way, just go on Amazon.com, type in The Clapper Memo, and it'll come up, or type in Bob McCarty, and it should be right near the top.
Okay, awesome. Thank you, Bob McCarty. Go to theklappermemo.com and get this book. It's amazing. And wouldn't it be great if we could use this on Hillary and Barack about Benghazi?
Oh, yeah, that'd be too much fun. All right. Thanks.
Okay,
thanks,
Bob. Talk to you soon.
We're back. We're going to wrap it up for this evening. Want to remind you one more time to go to Remember the Saldana, Remembering the Sultana, and you got 6 days left to raise $28,000 so that they can make this great film. And with Kickstarter, it's an all or nothing situation. You got to raise all the funds, or you get none of the funds. So go there, send them a couple of bucks. The grassroots folks are really great at raising this, you know, large amounts of money. Small amounts of money from large amounts of people can get the job done. And folks, this is amazing pieces of history that obviously have never been put out there, you know, for various reasons. And perhaps we'll find out why in the documentary. And, you know, the culture of corruption, it's always been there, folks. You're the ones who are in charge of whether or not it survives or whether it gets squashed. So help these independent film, you know, these people are making an independent film. They don't have a lot of money doing it. They're not getting the backing of the big Hollywood muckety-mucks. They're doing this on their own. It's a fabulous piece of history. This is a great way to honor veterans, you know, from the past, and you can be a part of it. So go to rememberingthesultana.com and send them some money. I want to thank Bob McCarty for helping me with that interview, and go to bobmccarty.com and pick up a copy of the Clapper Memo. And go also tonight, when you finish listening here, if you haven't downloaded your iTunes app, you can go to Culture Vigilante on Facebook or Missouri Grassroots Coalition on Facebook, and I've got the link there to the I'll be on with Owen Schroyer tonight after 9 o'clock. I want to thank you all for joining me tonight. Join Dave court this weekend, Fridays and Saturdays. He's talking about Article 5. Cynthia Davis on Tuesday evenings at 8 p.m. with Homefront, and I will be right back here, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Thank you for joining me, and we'll be here next week. Goodbye.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.